Tereo Ererangi o Te Mania. This episode was produced in Otatahi by Plains Media, with support from New Zealand On Air.
This is Emergence News on Plains Media, broadcasting on 96.9 FM, streaming live and available as a podcast on plains.org.nz. For more information, go to shareinternational.org.
Kia ora and welcome to Emergence News. My name is Nigel and in the studio with me are John and Peter. Good morning, chaps.
Morning.
Yep, good morning, Nigel.
I hope you both had a good coffee this
Could
morning.
Could we hurry up? Because I'm due for a second one and the addiction's gnawing away at me.
Well, I've been looking forward to this episode. Last time we talked about Helena Blavatsky. And we thought we would continue on the theme of trailblazers and pathfinders. But before we start on that, a little bit about the program. We're focused on the emergence of Maitreya and the Masters of Wisdom. These masters are the custodians of the plan of evolution and all the energies that enter this planet. This spiritual hierarchy is also known as the White Brotherhood, the Kingdom of God, the Spiritual Kingdom, or the Kingdom of Souls. Last time on this program, we talked about and we spoke and profiled a true pathfinder from the late 1800s. Her name was Madame Helena Blavatsky, who in the late 1800s first made available in writing an ancient body of spiritual teachings underlying all the world's major religions, as well as all scientific, social, and cultural achievements. So today, we continue to explore other trailblazers and pathfinders. And I'm looking at you, John.
Yes.
Name a person who's inspired you spiritually.
I really dug into this one because before I discovered the Maitreya story, I was reading all sorts of stuff. And the stuff that I got into as I started to become more spiritually aware doesn't interest me at all now. So I think that the stuff you start on isn't necessarily the stuff you stay with. But I guess I'd have to say Benjamin Creme. Mm. He really grabbed me. I went to that first talk in Christchurch, Peter, and I think you organised it. Was it 88 or 89? I can't quite remember. 1988 or 1989 here in Christchurch. And I sat in that meeting and I met Benjamin Creme a couple of times after that, here in Christchurch a couple of times, then at a conference I went to in San Francisco. And the man had a presence. He had something about him and he did some magic stuff, you know. And I was really kind of taken with, I think originally his sincerity and his quote, which I use all the time and I apply to my own self when we're doing this work. I'm not trying to recruit anyone. I am merely telling this story. And in doing so, I have done my task. And that detachment that he demonstrated really struck me, that he could tell a story and enlighten people and not be attached to it.
And let you do with the information what you wish.
And not try and sell you anything, not try and recruit you, not put you onto another website, just tell you this story. It really struck me. And I've been struck ever since, and I'm still a fanboy of Benjamin Creme.
And I think at the time you worked in sales, and that actually assisted you, didn't it?
Yeah, he had a detachment because of what he practiced and who he was and the information he had. But I was in sales at the time, and I started taking that detachment into the sales environment where I'm here to tell you something, but I would just go, this is my story, this is what I'm presenting, and that kind of detachment, I think people do find sincere and interesting,
and it helps the person relax.
Yeah.
And they don't feel quite so on edge as you deliver your sales pitch.
Yeah, and I think also one of the things I learned in sales, you're in the business of allaying fear. When you're in sales, you walk into your client, they tighten up. Oh, he said to sell me something. Oh, I don't don't want it, I don't want it. And Benjamin Krem kind of had that same ease with himself. You know, he was in many ways an oracle and a guru, but he didn't behave that way. I remember, Peter, we had a supper with him at Wanda Morrell's place back in the day
after
he gave a talk, and he was just a regular guy.
Yes.
But, you know, he had this master sitting on his shoulder, and he had, as a 3.2 degree initiate, he would have had all sorts of abilities and powers, but just a regular guy.
Very approachable.
Yeah, having a cup of tea and something to eat after.
In fact, he was telling us about how he liked salmon.
That's right. Salmon. Seafood, because it was a neutral vibration.
Yes, that's
you right. You could eat fish because it wouldn't affect your vibration, whereas meat, heavy meat, lowers your vibration, and the vegetarian diet raises your vibration.
That's really...
And fish is neutral.
It's neutral. That's so interesting. In 1988, I went vegetarian. I stopped eating meat overnight. And one of the reasons was because I was so unhealthy.
But also, Nigel, that whole approach to vegetarianism and that cleaning up your lifestyle is in preparation for an initiation. When you're approaching the first initiation, around about that initiation, you'll start to clean up your act. Diet, exercise, you start to prepare yourself to purify yourself for that initiation. So if our listeners out there are vegetarians, maybe they can think back to when they took it on, what was going on in their life and what's happened since.
Yes, so I was 27 at the time. I gave up smoking and drinking alcohol at the same time. So it was a total cleanup.
That's interesting. I did the same thing at 28. I was 28 and gave up. Alcohol, became a vegetarian, started to meditate. My spiritual awareness kind of went, hello, I'm here.
Yes.
And things really changed for me.
Who's a key figure that's inspired you, Peter?
Well, actually, Benjamin Krem, once again, I must say, following on from our conversation, I gave up smoking when I left high school. So,
when did you start smoking?
Don't ask. Probably about 12.
We don't know how old Peter is. He sits in the corner and just erupts with wisdom. I think he's a vampire.
So, yes, we did meet Benjamin Krem, and Wanda Morrell was, of course, the catalyst for that. And she had a meditation there which included transmission meditation. And she galvanised everyone to get behind getting Benjamin Krem out there. I'm sure none of us actually had any awareness of doing that, but she was determined to do it.
So. She was a mover and a shaker by the sound of it.
I'm just sitting here thinking, Peter, I met you at Wanders.
Yes.
We started another transmission group after Wanders, and Wanda was – there was stuff happening – in that house.
She was a pathfinder.
She was a pathfinder, thank you, Nigel, and a catalyst
for
a lot of stuff.
That's right, yes. So, that's where we first came across Benjamin Krem's idea. His books were becoming available while we were there, and we ordered them through doing the transmission meditation there. Mm. And we always had a nice supper afterwards as well, didn't we, John?
Okay, well, we'll keep this moving along because I can't wait to talk about the books. The person that I had a good think about this as well, and I was tempted to zero in on Benjamin Krem myself, but I thought John's bound to select Benjamin Krem, BC. So I went with a religious leader, actually.
Dalai Lama.
His Holiness the Dalai Lama.
You're a fanboy.
A huge fan. Now, I'm not going to read out too many of his quotes. What I'm going to do is I'm just going to list four or five of his qualities, which I can really identify. And
Nigel, you can identify with some of his qualities, but I can't see them in you.
Is that what I just said?
Yeah.
I'm going to list some of the qualities I admire.
Ah, okay. Sorry. Yeah, sorry. Misheard.
His attitude of humility and compassion towards the Chinese. That has always impressed me, how he handles that challenge, and it's an ongoing challenge. His ability to demonstrate humour when navigating serious issues, especially the area of suffering. His attitude to religion. He does not think that one religion exists for all people. Everyone has a different disposition, he says. He believes each individual should embark on a spiritual path that is best suited to his or her mental disposition, natural inclination, temperament, belief, family, and cultural background. He also says, here comes the humour, he also says, if I believed that Buddhism were best for everyone, that would be foolish. I just love his attitude. I just think it's quite entertaining. And, of course, he's also one of these inspiring individuals who I've actually attended a talk of his mm-hmm. when he visited Christchurch, and I think it was at the Westpac Trust Stadium. You were there, weren't you?
No, I was there in spirit, and I didn't.
Oh, you were there in... you were. I went there with Lily, and we thoroughly enjoyed his humour. He and another quality I admire is he inspires millions of people by speaking about difficulties that are common to all human beings, especially those current difficulties such as depression, anxiety, anger, jealousy, and moodiness.
Mm.
And he talks about these problems as an ordinary human being. Bit like Benjamin, how you two were just describing Benjamin Creme.
I was just going to say.
Very accessible.
Yeah, and what makes them accessible, what made Benjamin Creme accessible for me, Peter, was humour. He's got a sense of humour.
You know,
the guru or the oracle,
they sit and they talk and they wear their spiritual hat and everything's dead serious. And, you know, in case God's listening and I say something awful.
But the Dalai Lama... a lovely, jovial, chuckling sense of humour. Do you realise they're planning his reincarnation at the moment?
You just read my mind.
Which is easy to do because it's an open book, Nigel.
I'll take that three ways.
So I've had a coffee. I could just start anything.
So what is that? Who's planning his reincarnation?
Well, this is what intrigues. And Nigel's going to pick up on this because I can see you fizzing in the corner. But, Nigel, our wives are out there in the other room. I wonder if they're planning our next incarnation.
I dread to think.
They're talking about when we're going to pass and who they're going to replace us with.
Well, do you remember last year it was his 90th birthday? And he suggested that he will live for another 30 or 40 years.
No way.
Yes. So he's currently 90. So he's as ageless as Peter. So he's going to be – he thinks he's going to be around till he's about between 110 and 130 years old. And he also predicted that he intends to reincarnate in the free world. Now, interpret that how you will. I immediately thought about the emergence. And, of course – it could well be a free world by then.
What struck me when you said that is he wants to reincarnate outside the structures of Tibetan Buddhism. So that if he is a powerful being reincarnating, then he's had a couple of goes at the Buddhist stuff, hasn't he? Maybe he's now planning, or they, whoever, are planning the next incarnation to be where he can have an effect not constrained by Tibetan Buddhism and its beliefs and structures.
Very interesting perspective. What do you think, Peter?
Well, it's a possibility, isn't it? I mean, he would be like a third-degree initiate.
Yes.
Now, wouldn't he? I would think.
What do you think? What makes you think he's a third-degree, Peter, not higher?
I've always thought he's around the 3, 3.5.
Yeah.
For some reason, I haven't thought of him as a 4, but perhaps if he's going to live as long as he's predicting that he is, perhaps he is about to take the 4th initiation.
You see, his ability to talk with people particularly, and, you know, Blavatsky, although she was 4th degree, she didn't have an ability to talk to people.
And
she
didn't have the ability to get on with everyone either.
No. And so I see him in that, you know, the same sort of area. I mean, Benjamin Creme was nearly 3.5 when he died. So I see him in that sort of jovial sort of being able to deal with people and communicate.
And still grounded.
Very, very clearly, yes.
Yeah, we're a 4th degree initiate because the burden of their initiation can be so great. Maybe that limits to a degree their effectiveness amongst humanity.
Yes, it's more things that they have to do for themselves.
Yeah, I've gone back over the Blavatsky stuff that we talked about, and I think at the end of it I said she'd be great fun to have around, you know, she'd be great fun to have a cup of tea with. But she may not be.
Mm.
She might have been really difficult. Mm. She might have kept saying to me, shut up, young man.
Yes.
You know, you're talking nonsense. Shut up. I wouldn't have enjoyed that at all, Nigel.
Well, I'm not so sure you would have enjoyed Krishnamurti either, actually.
I'm a fanboy of Krishnamurti.
I know you like that.
But, yeah, he might have been telling me to shut up as well.
Yes, he was pretty blunt.
Yeah.
He was fairly forthright.
Actually, that's a really good point, Peter. His social the Dalai Lama's social skills may be an indicator of
his level of
initiation.
Yes.
I mean, he sounds like a second-ray soul
to me. Yeah.
And, you know, his love is all-encompassing.
Yes, it is. We need to keep moving on here, gents.
Yes.
Time is moving quickly. Name a book, John, that has inspired you on your spiritual journey.
Well, it was BC's books, Benjamin Creme. Initially, because I'm a reader and I understand, you know, that some people aren't. So picking up a book on a topic that interested me was actually reasonably easy. But within his writings, I found the answer to most questions. And not about, you know, will you ever win a lotto or will you ever meet your true love kind of stuff, but questions around the big stuff. And I'll leave that definition to each of you. But I found answers in his books, you know. So you could pick up a Benjamin Creme book. Mm. They're easy to read. They're easily digestible. You can flick through the contents at the front page or the index at the back and go, I want to know about faith. You know, and there'll be some great stuff there. So it was BC's books that really got me. I met him. I went to a transmission with him, and then I picked up a book and I went, oh, I've got hold of something here. You know, I was actually quite excited by it. So most of my reading was in those early days. I just consumed Benjamin Creme books.
What about you, Peter?
Yes, well, I must say that Maitreya's mission holds so much wisdom, doesn't it?
Oh.
And, you know, particularly when he's talking about people that we can relate to in history, who he describes their race structure and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And it's such a learning process, isn't it? It's just sort of there's so much nitty-gritty in there that it just keeps you coming back to discovering all that he talks about.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. And the thing, it's interesting, I've really got back into Maitreya's missions, the three volumes, because I see them as kind of encompassing everything. You know, now all the other books are a bit more specific, but those Maitreya Mission Volume 1, 2, and 3 books are real generalist.
Yes.
You know, and if you've got a question, have a look. It'll be in there somewhere.
Yep. You've just got to go through the index.
Yeah, yep.
Well, for me, I went back to when I was 27, 28, and I considered when I first started my spiritual journey, there were two books I was given. And the first one I read was Jonathan Livingston Seagull, and that was a wee bit abstract for me at the time.
Yep.
But then I was given a book called The Boy Who Saw True. Now, I couldn't tell you any detail about that book, but it left me with a huge sense of wonder, and I realized I want to investigate more in the whole area of spirituality. Yep. It was a book that was published in 1953. The author remains anonymous, and it was written by a boy aged in the Victorian England, and he was aged about 11 or 12, and he was writing a diary. So it's the diary entries of this young Victorian boy whose extraordinary supernatural talent reveals itself within the pages, but it's quite naive and insightful at the same time, funny and moving. It's also extremely convincing because the young writer is never setting out to win over his readers.
Detachment, Nigel.
He was born with incredible clairvoyant powers, could see auras and spirits, yet failed to realize that the other people around him, particularly the adults, did not have similar gifts.
Mm.
Now, according to Wikipedia, his wife, the wife of the writer, persuaded him just before his death to agree to the diary being published, but he made several stipulations. He says it was not to be printed until several years after his death. The bad spellings were to remain. And the diary was to be given to someone with a known interest in the occult. And his wife approached somebody who I think you in particular, Peter, might know of, Cyril Scott.
Yes, I do.
Now, Cyril Scott wrote the introduction to the book and he organised the publication of the book. And he was a prolific composer, music composer, writer, poet and occultist. He was very interesting because he was also into natural health. So he was interested in all sorts of things like victory over cancer, health, diet, and common sense. He published that in 1940. Cancer prevention, sleeplessness, and safer remedies. Fascinating man. And if you go onto Wikipedia, Cyril Scott, he's written symphonies, he's a poet, he's a pianist. He could play 12, a dozen different instruments. So he was multi-talented. Now, here's the link to Benjamin Krem. Cyril Scott is listed as a 1.5 initiate.
I was just going to ask that.
He's listed as a UK composer, and he was prolific as a musician. His ray structure was 24363, and his sub-rays were 6447. Notice there's a couple of fours in there because of the music.
Yep. Mm,
very creative man. So if it piques your interest, this book, The Boy Who Saw True, you can buy it still online. And if you're buying it in New Zealand online, it's approximately $24. You're listening to Emergence News. Now, the question we're going to finish the program with is, what are we doing on this radio program? What is our purpose? What's your mission, John?
I'm hoping, wishing, wanting when I say this, because I guess we'll never know. But I believe we are involved in preparing humanity for the emergence of Maitreya, the world teacher. We are the vanguard, as it were, and it's a term that he uses in a lot of his messages. I think that's our principal role. However, I think our secondary role may be to keep the message in front of our other Share International co-workers, to keep them engaged. And it's interesting you've raised Buddhism, Nigel, because the Buddhist term sangha, which means spiritual community, applies to the co-workers involved with Maitreya's story, however they are involved. It is of value, I think, when engaged in a mission or a spiritual practice or any endeavour of challenge, to surround yourself with like-minded people. So to support those others and to offer them support in their own growth and commitments, I think that's really important. I think that maybe we do that to a degree because, you know, you can sit down and listen to the three of us talking about Maitreya's mission, which may be of interest to you and may give you some insights and inspiration. The idea of sangha, I think, sits behind one of the strengths of the AA program. People in recovery there use meetings and a mentoring system to support each other through their own growth. And, you know, if you need some inspiration, a little bit of lighthearted approach to a serious topic, tune in to us.
Hmm. What about you, Peter?
Yeah, well, one of the things that interests me, I must say, and Benjamin Krem talks about the crop circles. And he says that, you know, they're made by our Sprace brothers. John had a video there at one point, didn't you? And just see this light whizzing around for 30 seconds and suddenly in the morning the crop circles were there. And I came across something recently, and it's talking about the crop circles, and these people are all a bit bewildered by them. But they do some interesting sort of study on them, and they're talking about a lot of these crop circles are aligned with the Sirius dog star in the same way that the pyramids are aligned.
Oh, yes.
And another thing they had to do with it was they got AI onto inspecting crop circles. I don't know how they did this, but anyway, they found the multitude of the crop of the stalks of the corn that is bent over is exactly 51 degrees. You can't tell me that this is somebody wandering around
some
with a plank.
Some drunk university student. Walking home from the boozer.
In Littleton.
And they're not broken. These stalks are not broken. The plant is still growing. But just imagine trying to line them all up for 51 degrees.
Millions of them.
Yeah.
Okay, and I'll quickly cover my purpose or mission on this radio program. On our last podcast, we featured a true trailblazer, Madam Helena Blavatsky. And I want to quote her words because I concur with these words from 1888. And she says, "Theosophists are of necessity the friends of all movements in the world, whether intellectual or simply practical. We are the friends of those who exercise practical charity and who seek to lift a little of the tremendous weight of misery that is crushing down the poor."